Hey, kids.
You're listening to the internet's wettest podcast about video games, consoles,
and pancakes.
The SML Podcast.
I'm so annoyed that, like, I'm tagged on something in Jacob's shitty memes because I'm never going in there. It's, like, really annoying.
I think it was me that tagged you.
Oh, thanks, Joe. Good job.
Let me find it.
It was a while ago.
Oh.
That. Like, quite a while ago.
I'm not sure then.
Yeah.
I did something for Jacob with Shawn Michaels doing the dick sucking motion and connectimals.
Can you hear me better now?
Yes.
Okay. Good.
Yeah, you do. Can't you just right click and say mark is red?
Well, cause, oh wait, what if I do that? Okay, yeah, you're right. What up? Lol.
Hi.
Howdy. Hi. How is everyone?
Great.
Pretty good.
Happy late birthday to Tim.
Oh, thank you.
How was it?
How was your birthday?
It was great. It was a very good weekend until it was over.
I saw you got your Atari.
I did get my Atari. It's sitting over here in the box. I'm touching it with my toe.
It looks so cool. I'm so jealous. I just saw that earlier and I was like, oh my God, it looks really great.
It does look really great. I didn't think I was going to be that interested in it initially, but like then I actually saw it in person and I was like, oh my God. And usually it's the other way around. Usually once I see a Lego set like built in person, I'm kind of like, oh, okay, that's what it looks like. But this one I was like, oh, this is actually excellent.
I'm gonna go look at it right now.
Yeah, it's different in person. It's just different seeing the thing. Yeah, but yeah, I look forward to putting it together and putting it next to my Lego NES and the wood panel TV that came with that.
Have awesome. You ever
thought of like streaming that? Because I know some people are really into watching people stream Lego builds.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, cool. I streamed some of me building the Lego NES actually, and one time people watched, and the other times people didn't.
So didn't. Awesome.
That's how it goes.
That's the fun of streaming.
That is the fun of streaming. That is with our two viewers right now. So what's up, hey, everybody? This is the SML Podcast.
Hey, all you need is a couple. Are they both in this call?
No, it's me and Carnage.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm there.
Are you?
It just doesn't count me, I guess. Yeah,
I'm there. I guess. I don't know. It just says two viewers at the top.
I don't count, though. No,
I see whatever. Myself. Oh, I'm under moderators.
Nice. There you go.
I'm not watching this shit.
So yeah, it's a party cast. I'm not Chris moderating is here. This shit. Pernell's here. Tim's here. Brooke's here. How's everyone doing?
Good. Yeah,
pretty great. I'm pulling a Pernell tonight, and I will be playing Elden Ring while we
awesome
hanging out. So I'm having a pretty good time. Caught up on my life bullshit. So
it's where are you in that game now? I assume you just did Volcano Manor, but
yeah, I just finished up with Prison Town, and I like kind of stayed in it too long. I wanted to like beat everybody that like beat me at the beginning, and I rolled into their level 60, and I'm a lot higher now. So that's cool. Yeah. Finished up with that, and I want to tell you where I am now, but maybe spoilers if you don't want any spoilers.
Like 6 months. Yeah, it's been months. If you haven't played it, well, you're
not. I think she's referring to me. Just pointing that out.
Yeah, Pernell's picking it back up. Pernell, plug your ears for a minute if you don't want to hear like a little spoiler. But where I am now, I went back to Radahn's thing because somebody was like, yo, there's something in there, dude. So I've been walking around the desert in game days for now, for like a few hours now. Looking around.
Back where?
To General Radahn's, like, you know, you can warp to like the old boss points.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So I went back to his desert because I was like, I bet there's nothing in there. And they're like, no, there's something in there. And I like looked all over, finally got into the catacomb there. And,
yeah, it's a great time. It's a real son of a bitch, that catacomb.
Yeah, I'm not going to make it. I'm not high enough level for that right now. But I had a really good time rolling in there for some reason with 30k XP dying and then sneaking back in and trying really hard to get it back. So I just got that back. So that's where I'm at right now.
Goodness. I was like, why are you doing that? You fool. You should know better by now.
Dude, it doesn't matter how much I play this game. I'm over 200 like real playtime hours in this this run. And I'll be like, oh, I want to try the old boss that used to kill me. And I'll just wander over there with like 30 to 40K runes. And I don't know why I keep doing that. And Carrie will be like, God damn it, you did it again. Like, right. So I should probably be a much higher level. So I'm definitely challenging myself. Might not be meaning to do that, but it's been a challenging run. I'm having a great time, though. I'm glad I was able to pick it back up. I was worried taking like a month and a half, maybe almost 2 months off. I wouldn't have any muscle memory, but actually like, I feel like I picked up where I left off fighting. I'm doing Sword and Shield. So I'm telling Purnell, man, get back in there. It's not too late.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the kind of skill set that sticks with you like across games, which is how I can jump into a new one. And I already kind of feel good about what's going on.
I'm so excited to like be able to jump in the other games. Cause like you told me that and another friend did too. So I'm pumped for that.
Popping back in. Is the spoiler gone yet?
Yeah, it's gone. I should have chatted you. For now, I'm going to be more organized about that next time, and I'm gonna DM you. I'm going to slide into your DMs for the right reasons.
There's a wrong reason?
Ask Aki.
Oh, my God.
Oh, God, I don't even know. Should I ask Aki? This sounds terrifying already.
I guess we should ask Brooke.
She's all right, y'all.
I want to keep Brooke in good spirits. Let's not tank that with thoughts of bad DMs or something. So let's focus on the positive, like the fact that Coca-Cola fucked me over once again.
They have
another damn flavor that has no conceptual sense. So I had to try it because I was like at the store. I was like, wait, that bottle looks different. What is the Dream World flavored fucking soda? What Dream the hell World. Is Dream?
What does it taste oh, like?
Did you play Ballon?
Is Dream flavored soda? Whatever that it's is. Like that.
If it's it not been like, put in orange, I'm gonna be pissed off.
It tastes like a wet dream. Or let me see.
No,
I'm sorry.
Well, let me rephrase it. It tastes like a. Consider that it is dream flavored. The joke on, was that was it funny. Tastes like a wet. No, it wasn't because it was at my expense. Anyway, the point is, I have no idea what this tastes like. It's one of those things where they just took a bunch of different syrup flavors and just dumped them in the vat together and said, hey, this is what dreams taste like. But it is good. I'll give it that.
Why do they keep setting goals for themselves that they're never going to be able to reach? You can't name it Starlight. Like, you came out too hot. It's never going to taste like that, even if you guys made a good product.
But that's the weird thing. Like, they don't even have to. All it is like, they put this bottle on the shelf. A goober like me walks into the store. Space Same. Flavor. A fuck is space flavor? I have to know. What did the guy high on shrooms and goofballs think space tasted like? I'm going to buy it and check. And did it taste like space? I don't know. I've never been there.
I almost spit out a drink that I was drinking when he said, I'm going to buy it and check. So relatable.
I'm mad that the musician Marshmallow released a Coke flavor, but it wasn't marshmallow flavored.
Okay, that's bullshit.
Yeah, I know.
That was a strange thing he did. It was a good flavor he chose, but it should have been marshmallow flavored.
Like, it's right there.
Coke and marshmallow like sounds like a good artificial flavor combo if we're going to go there. Like, I want to try that.
Absolutely. I got some exotic Japanese Kit Kats that taste like a flan custard.
Ooh.
Oh, my God. I've tried a lot of weird Japanese really Kit Kats, and I have not tried those. I love them so much. I got, like, a ton of them for Christmas, too. I was so pumped. They're good.
If loving
like
weird Japanese ones. Kit Kats is wrong, I don't want to be right.
Yeah. Yeah, that is a... Pretty steady the last few like gift giving events. I have gotten some kind of exotic Kit Kat to try.
I mean, there's some good flavors enough at the right store. Yeah.
Strawberry's really good. I had a bunch last year that were there was like a lot of matcha in there, and I don't like that. But I've had lots of good weird ones.
I like the matcha ones.
The matcha is the best matcha.
Well, it's either you like it or you don't. It's like cilantro.
I'd rather have matcha as opposed to gotcha. I'll tell you that much.
My favorite thing about matcha is how it tastes like soap.
Gene,
you told me you don't like the taste. I was like, you better like the taste of soap. It's so good.
Floral, nice and floral.
Right. Well, I was
so fresh, so cool.
I was making a joke because
a cilantro
that's
humor.
People's yeah, a little cilantro humor for you.
Oh my
fresh
god,
from the south.
I said cilantro. This is Florida girl coming out tonight. This is
cilantro.
Awesome.
Cilantro.
It's been a while.
So now you got to own it. That's all. No
yeah.
harm.
Used to say, I have a question for y'all. Y'all are like, a lot of y'all are on the East Coast. I grew up saying pecan, and I moved to Texas, and everybody was like, "Are you fucking crazy?" Like they
I've
treated me
both.
Like that was really weird.
Pecan.
See, that's where I find it funny. It's like, first of all, I think that's the sort of word where I don't think you can go wrong either way. I grew up calling it saying pecan.
Yeah, same.
But you can totally go either way. I mean, the letters are there to pronounce it in that manner. There's no silent letter. It's just English is stupid, so it flows in both pronunciations.
Pecan.
So, I pronounce it pecan, as in, get those pecans away from me. I hate them. Oh, these cookies have pecans in them. They're ruined. And so I don't care how other people pronounce them.
Pecan pie.
Nah, it's a mid pie at best.
It's like one of the best pies.
I make a mean pecan pie. I make you one, Purnell. Instead of corn syrup, I use pure maple syrup. It's so good.
I'm not making this up. You do the pie. I will pay you or some shit. Mail me pie.
I will pay you or some shit.
if we can figure out how to mail pie, it'll happen.
I'm pretty sure that they can mail pie.
Yeah.
With a pie that has like a soft eggy custardy kind of feel to it, like, come on, is it gonna
might not go well? I mean,
it shows up as a slurry.
And,
I'll still eat
the whole thing. Yeah,
let's be real. If it arrives as a slurry, I'm still going to eat it. So I mean, that the
just
form
pour it into
matter.
A glass.
Yeah, I just pour it out and eat it. The shape does not matter.
There you go.
Do not.
Pecan soup.
All right. Okay. Delicious.
That's right. I would love it. Love it. Love it. Love it. Love it. I mean, really, outside the crust is pretty much just a glop anyway.
That's
a
true.
Tasty, tasty glop.
I feel like that's one of the things you have to have grown up with it, like buttermilk pie too. Like if you didn't have it as a kid, it might be kind of weird to you. Sweet potato pie too.
Buttermilk pie is a thing?
Yeah, it's like it's also like a kind of a custardy pie. If you had chess pie and buttermilk pie are like really similar.
I've had neither. I've had peanut butter pie.
That's delectable.
That shit's delicious. My grandmother made a really good one.
See, we're all about the pies. We need dream flavored pie.
Marshmallow pie.
Yeah, we do.
Starlight pie.
Yeah.
then they all start getting really weird, start making star dream pie, and it's like, fuck.
It's a pie that tastes like mushrooms and goofballs.
Coke needs to get their shit together with their flavor naming. I agree with you, though.
That's the thing. Like, that's the thing that bugs me the most. Like, as much as I hate it, what they're doing is smart. I mean, the reason a lot of people are buying the shit that they do is specifically because the names make no sense. It's like, it's the curiosity in you that says, like, if let's say, for example, it was pecan Coke, Chris would see it and go, no, I'm not drinking that shit. It probably tastes like some form of pecan. I'm not eating it.
Dude, that sounds good, though.
Why can you change the pronunciation in that sentence?
That's right.
I've heard, I swore it both ways, baby. Mm. But the actual dream world flavored soda, the absurdity sells it. It's the absurdness of them having the audacity to say, we can make this drink. We know what dreams taste like. And the buyer going, I have to find out. This is bullshit, but I want to know.
Yeah.
That's kind of like the chaotic good version of Jones Soda's chaotic evil Thanksgiving sodas.
Oh, Jesus.
I miss those sodas so much.
I've never had them, and I don't think I ever want to.
No, it's an event. It's an event. You want it because it's an event.
Now, I don't believe you.
It is the truth. Think of it this way. I'm not lying to you in the fact that I want to tell you they're disgusting as shit. Except
then why would I want to try them?
Wait. I'm getting there. And then you can judge it how you want.
I'm already judging.
I've had them on three separate occasions.
What is wrong with you?
Because each time I had them with different friends.
Okay.
It's a weird sort of friends event. You're not going to die from the drink. And knowing that, it's just this weird sort of fun that comes from saying, just like the Dream Soda, it's like, these guys said they could make a soda that tastes like mashed potatoes and gravy. I like soda. I like mashed potatoes and gravy. There's a disturbing level of curiosity that says, I have to know what this tastes like. I want to know where they went with this. And the first time I had it, it was completely new to me. So I was like, okay, let's all drink it. We'd all drink a bit. And we had a sort of like taste testing. And we actually reviewed it for our website we ran at the time. And at the end of it, I was like, I guess I got to take the rest of these sodas home. My friend was like, why would you do that to yourself? I was like, because I spent money. I don't want to waste my money. And she took the bottles out of my hand and ran to the kitchen and started yanking them down the drain. She's like, this shit is not meant for human consumption.
This is not happening.
She's like, I won't let you drink these. I won't let you take them home and do this to yourself. So I was like, okay. I experienced it. It was fun. And then my one friend goes, hey, look what I won at the company Christmas party. It was another case of the Thanksgiving soda.
Oh my God. I was like,
if you drink them, I'll drink them with you. But you got to drink
them. So you willingly did it?
Because I wanted him to drink it. Oh. That's the point. Oh, he had to get down with the drinks.
You're evil.
Oh, that's gross. I don't want them.
You know how it tastes, and you forced someone to drink that stuff.
And that's somebody that he likes. So, like, don't piss Purnell off because he's not afraid to get his hands dirty.
Purnell will fuck with you. Okay.
And that stuff.
Bonding, guys. It's bonding.
I agree.
And turkey soda is not poison, therefore you cannot build up an immunity to it. So he suffered the exact same amount each time.
Oh my God, that's such a good point.
Think about it. I will say this, though. If you already know, like, you can't, like, you can brace yourself, kind of. Like, you know what's coming. So you can be like, all right, this isn't going to be a shocking bad taste. It's just a bad taste. So you can be like, okay, let's do this. And then you drink, and you're like, everyone else is making a face. You're just like, It's like eating a hot chip the first time and be like, oh fuck, this chip is hot, because you weren't prepared for how hot the chip was. So you train yourself, you know, you run down, like, you run laps around the track, you know, you do push-ups and sit-ups in preparation for eating a raw chip.
Egg for breakfast.
You get that raw egg, knowing that that's going to help prepare you to eat a red hot potato chip.
See, when I eat a red hot potato chip and I'm like, ah fuck, that's hot, I'm like, here, take the bag, I don't want anymore.
I'm like, give me more.
That's
like,
my I got a bag of hot potato chips. I have a
like
sensitive
those Pringles
tongue.
That they just put out. Do you remember? Did you know about the Pringles that came out? They're a limited edition.
No.
They are based on the Hot Ones TV show.
Oh, geez.
So of course I had to try those.
Nice.
And surprise fact, they're actually hot.
Oh, nice.
In an unprecedented set of events, Pringles made a chip that actually makes you go, fuck, this is hot.
Oh, wow.
And I'm like, I got a jar of, like, a tube of them downstairs. I'm eating through bit by bit by bit. They're good, though. They're tasty. They're just, they ain't fuck around. This isn't that, like, well, how hot do you want it? I want my face to melt. And then it comes out just like wuss heat. Like, no, this is the real deal.
Pringles delivers potato chips in a tennis ball tube. I mean, when they want to do something, they can do it.
Yeah. They don't fuck around.
Who's going to tell them that's impossible. Not right?
You know who else doesn't fuck around? Us with our video game reviews. How's that for a segue?
That was
Actually, I think we do fuck around with them quite a bit.
Yeah, we do.
We're pretty bad.
We are not good.
Mine's going to be that way.
No, we're very good at what we do, even if no one agrees with us. Fuck those people. We're great.
Well, should we start
for
these?
Now,
we got a good chunk to talk about tonight. Should we get into this?
Sure.
Let's disco duck.
All right. The first game to talk about is a two-pack. We got Turrican Anthology Volume 1 and Volume 2, developed and published by InIn Games, released July 29th on Switch and PS4 for $34.99 each. The sensational Turrican series was celebrated as a groundbreaking video game series, mixing exploration with nonstop action and one of video games' finest soundtracks by legendary German composer Chris Hulsbeck. I'm sure I butchered that. Play through the history.
It's Hulsbeck.
Yay.
I'll see it.
You got it right.
Play through the history of Turrican's finest moments and discover new additionally added features. Chris, what is going on in Turrican Anthology Volume 1 and Volume 2?
What's not going on? Never mind. okay, so this is why I have 12 tabs open on my browser right now. Because And anybody who has ever played or gotten to know the Turrican series, you know, they know exactly what I'm talking about. Okay, so we need to, like most of the time when I do a classic game compilation, we got to do a little bit of a history lesson. I'm so sorry. Get out your notepads. There will be a quiz. No, I'm just kidding. So Turrican is a game that was largely made by two people. One of them was... what's his... Oh, God, I've already lost his name.
You had notes!
I know. I have tabs. I don't have notes. I almost gave him the wrong notes. Last name. I know his name is Manfred, but I almost said Manfred Mann. Like Manfred Mann's Earth Band. I'm old. Manfred Trends and Chris Hulsbeck are like the two like main factors of like a Turrican game. Manfred Trends, of course, invented the character, programmed the things and stuff like that. The first game came out on like Commodore 64, which is not included in this collection, but what is included in Volume 1 are the first two games, which we Americans really didn't see because they came out on the Amiga system, other British computers, you know, Commodore 64. And, you know, they've seen the light of day in, like, certain little ways, but basically the first two adventures are, you know, Turrican and Turrican 2 are the Amiga version of the game. Now, the principles of Turrican are pretty consistent in the sense that, you know, good luck knowing the difference between any of these games when you play through them, like, the first few times, because they all... Although they do have different stories, and actually past, I think, the first game, they involve, like, a kind of Mega Man style, you know, same hero and same, you know, villain. The villain is a kind of, what did he look like? Like, kind of a Megazord-looking guy called The Machine. And your dude is Bren Maguire. And the Turrican is a suit, but in the first game, like, the Turrican is, like, some kind of thing. It's just a manufactured thing. But basically, it's a guy with a gun and some armor, and he runs around just these giant levels that kind of branch off a little bit, but, like, they're kind of, instead of being, like, stitched-together screens, it's more like they're just large kind of exploratory areas, but in a platforming sort of way. At least, like I said, for some of the games, it's like this. And the idea is that you explore around, uncover new and awesome weapons. Instead of being able to, like, aim your gun up or down or, you know, Contra style, like, it is a run-in gun, but it's, it feels a little bit more like a shooter at times because it's, you know, all about grabbing that spread shot and grabbing the missiles. And, in the later games, you know, spinning around like a little buzzsaw and dropping bombs all over the place, you know, just fun, chaotic, you know, huge explosion damage like that. And all set to just the most incredibly 80s European like soundtracks. Like, you know, Chris Hulsbeck is a legend for a reason, and that he worked on every single one of these games. Mad props. I love his music. Anyways.
And so, apparently the soundtracks in the game, there's different soundtracks you could choose from, including the emulated version, the original version remastered by Chris Hulsbeck himself, or the Turrican soundtrack anthology music.
Yes, and options. We got options there. We've got, I was going to kind of go over like some of the features, but yeah, we got different kind of options for like controls and for, you know, your... the music, of course, and maps and things like that. Like, maps are kind of introduced in there, you know, overlay maps that are pretty cool. You also...
That's just cool. They got him to remaster the soundtrack himself.
Oh, yeah, yeah. He's still around. He's actually on Twitch. I follow him. He does some stuff sometimes here.
Nice.
But, anyways, yeah, so they got... Yeah, it's a very dressed-up anthology. But, yeah, it's basically like... you know, like Turrican games tend to be, the anthology collection is split into two, like kind of down the middle, like a baby or something. I don't know. It's like, you know, just there's
split
Mega Turrican on both
like
sides.
A baby.
There's, yeah, like in the Bible. Remember how they were splitting babies? Y'all don't remember.
Man, this review took a turn. Takes me back.
That takes me back to the olden times.
In the book. You want to find out who really wants the baby?
Sorry, yeah, exactly.
Sound off on my remembering Bible ass over here.
No. Yeah, yeah. So there you go. That joke was for Brooke specifically.
Nice.
Thank you, dude.
But like, for instance, like the reason I say is because like you want your Mega Turrican, well, you got to get both anthologies because you've got Mega Turrican, like you've got the two versions on Anthology 2, but Anthology 1 has Mega Turrican's score attack. So it's, you know, which is another take on the game. So let's let us untangle these games in these anthology collections, and then we'll get into like the features and stuff, because I'm trying not to take an hour on this. So your classic Turrican and Turrican 2 in the Amiga version, which, as I understand, I have a very limited understanding of British computer systems, but I understand the Amiga versions are the considered the top versions. You know, the Commodore 64 version was the first, but, you know, since they basically improved it in every way for the Amiga, you know, that's the version that made it. So Collection 1 has those first two games. Now, the next game that came out... was Super Turrican on the Super Nintendo. Now, this is probably the one that most people like would have played, but it strays a little far away from, not far away, but it basically it takes Turrican 2 and kind of goes in a little bit of a different direction with it, with like kind of different levels and different movesets and stuff, but it'll be very familiar to if you've played through the other one. And that one also... So on Collection 1, you have Super Turrican, which is the Super Nintendo game, and Super Turrican Director's Cut. Now, what's important about this is that this is a physical... So when they released Super Turrican, it was published by Sega, which is a publishing company that, you know, made some questionable but also good, like, kind of Super Nintendo games and, you know, in that era. But they basically said, we don't want to... release this game on a 6 meg cart. That's too much, so you got to cut it down to 4 megs. So they had to like cut out basically the last level and to get the Super Turrican we all know and love. So the Director's Cut adds it back in. It's a 6 meg game, the way that you know, Manfred would have that old Manfred man would have wanted it. And that version actually has a physical release too. It was the packed in Super Nintendo game for the Super NT from Analog, which came out, you know, that $200 Super Nintendo that came out like a few years ago, and no one ever, you know, it sold out like constantly, probably still sold out. I don't know. It's been years. But, That's the, yeah, I don't know. But the Director's Cut was an exclusive physical release that came out with the Analog Super NT, and now that's included on this collection too. Like I said, it adds in another level, some other content, which is great. And then, like I said, you get Mega Turrican Score Attack. Now, Mega Turrican is the Genesis game that came out along with Turrican 3, and both of those are included on the second anthology. So starting from the top with the second anthology, you've got Turrican 3, which is also an Amiga game, so that rounds out the original Turrican, like, trilogy, as you will, in terms of, like, their first releases. And then you get the Mega Turrican on Genesis and Mega Turrican Director's Cut. Now, these are somewhat similar to the Super Nintendo one. Like, they kind of look similar and, you know, control and stuff. And they have, like, also, like, the same bosses and for a couple of the same bosses, a couple of the same levels. But then they have, like, exclusives in each. Again, splitting the baby as far as that goes. You know, if you want the full experience of, like, this game, you got to play both of them.
I appreciate that you committed to this, by the way. I'm really loving this. I'm thank grinning.
Thank you. An interesting thing about Turrican, I was going to get into like the games that didn't make it onto the anthology. I might as well do that now. So Super Turrican actually started as an NES game, also called Super Turrican, that's completely different from the Super Nintendo game that Manfred Trenz made just by himself. And then, well, I mean, with Hulsbeck as well, I think. And yeah, that apparently isn't very good, and so it's not on the collection. Another thing to note is that when Mega Turrican first came out, it actually was reskinned into being the official Universal Soldier game. So it had the Jean-Claude Van Damme Dolph Lundgren film attached to it. And that game is a trip because not only is your Turrican guy, who controls like a robot basically, not only is it, you know, reskinned to be Van Damme, but they replaced a giant dragon boss in the game with a Dolph Lundgren and didn't scale it down. It's just you're fighting a 30-foot Dolph Lundgren in one stage for no reason, and I love that. I wish that was included, but in fact, they later, you know, actually developed the Megaturrican fully and brought it over, and like that was... Some consider that the best one for the home console port. So, like, that is included on Anthology 2, along with the Director's Cut, which, again, adds levels and content. I don't know anything else about it. We don't care. And then, like, as the star was starting to fade, they did release a Super Turrican 2 on the Super Nintendo that it kind of got taken over by another company. So... while Hulsbeck did the soundtrack, I think Manfred Trenz was like just involved in like the art or something. It's completely different, and it's a little bit more like a Contra Blast Corps in the sense that it has like a lot of different gameplay things that happen. I think that's the one that just straight up has like shmup levels in it and things like that. So not only do you have that, you have Super Turrican 1 Score Attack. Which is, again, the Super Nintendo. It's a third version of the Super Turrican, where two of the versions are already on Anthology 1. So, again, you've got two Super Turricans on Anthology 1 and a third Super Turrican 1 on Anthology 2, along with Super Turrican 2. Do you know now why I have so many tabs open?
Yes. I just have two tabs open. One for Volume 1 and one for Volume 2.
Yeah, I just wanted to make sure I had like names and stuff done. Anyways, so yeah,
but basically
that is...
in a wrap up, each anthology has three games, a director's cut, and then a score attack from a game from the other anthology.
Exactly. And as far as I'm not going to go into each individual game. No one wants that.
No.
if you played one Turrican game, you've got the template. It's like Mega Man, you know? It's, you know, there are new things introduced in each game. Each one of them is an action-packed romp, is really fun. Again, excellent soundtracks, even though Hulsbeck, like, for instance, for, like, Super Turrican 2, he went more, like, kind of an orchestral type thing. Sounds a little bit more cinematic, whereas, like, the Amiga games are just straight-up 80s bops, you know? Like, there's lots to love here, and I can't separate these two anthologies. You're just going to have to get them both, or you could get the other thing, Turrican Flashback, which is also by this, you know, from the same publisher, and it's simply Turrican, Turrican 2, Mega Turrican, Super Turrican, and that's it. And that's also available on the same PS4 and Switch. There you go.
Well, we're not talking about Flashback. We're talking about Anthology, damn it.
while we're untangling the Turrican legacy, we might as well mention Flashback because people might be tempted to pick it up as well as the Anthology.
Cinematic Universe.
Looks like that one came out last year, and that one is $30, but the Anthologies, $34.99 each. What do you think of each one? What do you think of the package as a whole? I don't believe they sell it as a combo at all, but you seem to be suggesting that you got to buy them both. So what are your thoughts?
I mean, you don't want half a baby. That's no good. But they're just giving you that option, like I said, so that you'll understand that you truly love Turrican enough to purchase both. They're fantastic. And again, the things that players of today crave the most are present here. That is to say, options, controllability, also rewind feature. That's extremely important. You can unlock cheats and also, I believe, use the classic cheats that used to be hidden in these games. I found all of them on GameFAQs, so those are there too. Because apparently a lot of people like to cheat in these games. I don't know. I wouldn't know. I'm an honest Christian here. And it's got all the good stuff. It's got the pixel perfect mode, also the stretchy modes, and like, you know, all the stuff you would expect from like a good retro game compilation. Also detailed scans of each and every single instruction book, including the Amiga ones, so that's been really cool to look at too. And funny enough, as much as I kind of dismiss the stories of the games, they do go into the stories. It's kind of wild. But yeah, there's nothing I can find to complain about with these games. You are getting all the Turrican that you could possibly want. And like I said, if you feel like this is too much Turrican for you, well, you've got the little tiny Turrican flashback collection available as well. So, I mean, you really can't go wrong. The only thing I recommend that I don't recommend is purchasing all three, because flashback is redundant, because Turrican Anthology 1 and 2 literally have everything in them that the that flashback has. So there you go.
Fair.
It's a buy it.
Unless you're a Dolph Lundgren fan.
Yeah, if you're a Dolph Lundgren fan, just hit up that, you know, Universal Soldier on the Genesis if you can find it. You know, I think that one's also was on the Game Boy or something like that. It's weird. God.
All right.
That's where my research ended.
All right. Well, next game to talk about is The Dark Heart of Balor, developed and published by Game Artists, released August 4th on Steam Early Access for $14.99. Archdemon Balor has opened the gates of hell into the human realm, and hordes of demons and monsters have flooded into your world, destroying everything in their path. You must protect those who are still alive and ultimately destroy Balor to close the gate. Tim, what is going on in The Dark Heart of Finn Balor?
I knew you wouldn't be able to resist the old wrestling joke. Yeah, so let's just keep in mind that this game's in early access, and it shows. I don't know. The game, so it's a 2D side-scrolling level-based joint that if you were to take a glance at it, you would be like, wow, the people who made this game really like Diablo's UI. Because you have a red orb on the left for your health, you have a blue orb on the right for your magic, and then you have a bunch of little squares in the middle for all your hotkeyed actions, two of which are a red potion for your life and a blue potion for your magic. Other than that, not Diablo-esque, because it is a side-scroller and there's no loot.
There's just a weird UI choice.
It is weird, and I guess tonally, like, you know, it hits a, you know, has a dark fantasy thing going on, which one could say is Diablo-esque, or, you know, it's just cribbing off of Souls, since that's usually the touchstone for dark fantasy things these days in video games. But either way, yeah, it is a 2D side-scrolling level-based joint, not a Metroidvania. Which I don't know. I guess when you linked me to it, I just kind of assumed. I'm like, yeah, sure, of course it is. But no, it's level based. Like, you'll get to the end of a level and it will, like, total up your score and secrets and all
even,
that stuff.
Even Steam is, like, similar to games you've played, and it's Dust and Elysium Tale, which is a Metroidvania.
No, it is not like that, in many ways. It's level based. There's no kind of, I mean, again, keep in mind early access, there's like no kind of menu between levels at this point. I didn't see like a level select at this point. There's not like just like a cool looking overworld map to kind of just guide your progress and make it feel like you're moving through the world. That is not there. You just kind of pop from one level to the next. You have the option to replay a level when you complete it. But that's it. So you got your guy, and he has some swords. He can jump. He has some sword swings. He has three different sword combo options, which I was struggling to figure out why. Because this game has a lot of buttons. It has a lot of controls to it. And three of the face buttons are dedicated to different combo paths for your sword, and it seems like the one that's on X is just fine and will kill everything just fine. You can link like the combo. I noticed that it's like, oh, like the second or third hit of the combo off the X button looks like the first slash of the Y button combo, and sure enough, you can go from one to the other if you have the timing right. I could not get that to happen with the B button combo. It slashes, that one slashes kind of horizontally, so I thought, like, okay, well, maybe you use that to hit things that are slightly off of your the two-dimensional plane your man is walking on, because it is a 2.5D game, and there are things that will be, like, slightly in the background that will attack you, but it seems like your regular sword slash will just hit them just the same. You have a shield. You have a dash, which is on a cooldown. Which is not cool. I am not down with that. I just want to dash infinitely. do get, you know, the aforementioned potions. You do get magic to throw around. You can control your character with the analog stick or the D-pad, though there are some problems with all of this. So you need to, like I said, the game has a lot of controls. So accessing like your hotkey, like your hot item buttons down there along the bottom involves holding the left trigger, the right trigger, or both of them at once, which will then change the assignment of the face pad buttons. So that's a thing you have to kind of fumble with and get used to. The controls of this game are kind of a mess, even just kind of beyond that. I use the D-pad naturally because it's a 2D game first. And when I first approached a ladder, I was like, oh, is this like one of those decorative ladders or is this some shit I can climb? Both of these things exist in video games, in my experience. But I, you know, walked up to them and I could not climb up or down. I was like, OK, I guess they're just decorative, till I got to a point where I'm like, OK, I have to climb this fucking ladder. Is there like an interact button or something that I'm missing? What I was missing is that when you control your character with the analog stick, they just climb ladders when you press up. But for some reason, it doesn't do it on the D-pad.
Weird.
Yes, it is. And also, like, there is a mechanic where you will grab onto the edge of a ledge, like not every ledge, but like particular ledges. It'll be like, okay, you can grab onto this. You cannot pull yourself up using the D-pad. You have to press up on the analog stick. They have also assigned the interact button to L3, which is pushing in the stick. And obviously you can't just push in the D-pad to get this function, and this is, you know, where you most games that you know have this task to solve usually end up just foregoing like D-pad controls for movement, and they just assign items down there so they can assign more important functions to the face buttons, which in this game you know you have to hotkey your way with triggers, and for some reason three of the face buttons are attacks and just seem redundant. Like it could definitely be brought down to two, and then you could do something else with the B button, like interact would be great. And then there's something, so like the kind of, I don't know, a gimmick of the game. I don't know if it's the gimmick. I don't really know what the gimmick of the game is, like what the hook is, like why am I supposed to, like what is it that makes this game interesting and stand apart? But after you die to the first boss, which you will, it's death. He kills you. That's his job. This Fair. Other little demon will pop up and be like, hey, we're making a deal. And he will then inhabit you, which makes your sword glow purple as you beat things up, and gives you some kind of a wrath ability, which I'm still not entirely clear on what it does. It definitely took a certain amount of time to build it up, but I'm not sure if it's like context sensitive with the environment. There was times when I tried using it and it seemed to do nothing. I was just kind of expecting it to do some kind of like an energy burst, like when I was surrounded by enemies. Don't know. Not quite sure. And that guy also gives you magic abilities, which the first one you get is just kind of a simple like energy bolt magic missile you huck across the screen. As you defeat enemies, you will level up, which will earn you skill points. And then here's where shit gets really wild. You know how you get into the menus of this game? The menu specifically for like powering up your character? It is not currently a button on the controller. You have to use your keyboard or mouse to get into that menu.
Wow.
Because it was talking about it. I'm like, what the hell's going on? And then I finally figured out, like, oh, if I moused down and clicked the button, then it pulled up the menu. And then I saw the hotkey, and it was like, okay, I can hit T. So you can't access, like, three of the menus that are down there on your, you know, your hotbar, except by using the keyboard, which seems like a bad choice.
Yeah, especially when the Steam page says full controller support.
Nah, that's a slight exaggeration. I mean, every button on that controller is supported, but does all that function support everything you need to do in the game? Not that I saw. like, maybe I'm missing something, but I, you know, looked around in those menus. Like, you can pause the game, you can hit start, and that will pull up like your options menus and shit. But it wasn't like my character ability crap. No, no, no. Also seems like the main, well, also the main menus you have to mouse and keyboard through, like they do not respond to controller. So no, that's just not correct at this time. I actually got it to completely crash in the menus when I was poking around trying to reload my game. Again, early access.
Yeah,
it's very early on. Clearly they have some things to iron out.
Yeah, it does say that they plan to be in early access for a year or more.
So yeah,
this very, is the time to get early feedback.
On. Yeah. Very, very early on. It's just my, so, you know, you're clunking around through these levels, like, and beyond like all of this stuff, like just like controlling your character for like platforming and combat doesn't feel great. Doesn't feel excellent. So I'm, like I said, I'm trying to find like what the hook of the game is. Cause you know, the gameplay still needs to work. I'm not seeing like what systems are in place that like really make it stand out. It makes me, it feels like someone was making a 2.5D game, like in the turn of the century, like PS2 Dreamcast era. And it just feels kind of like clunky and, you know, it's, again, it's early access. It's not there yet. They have a lot of work to do still, but I'm just like, well, what is going to set this apart from every other, you know, dark fantasy 2D action game, Metroidvania sort of thing. And I just don't know what that is yet. You know, the jumping didn't feel good. The combat didn't feel great. If you get, you know, surrounded by enemies, you get hosed. But so keeping them on one side of you is important. It was sometimes tough to navigate levels because there isn't a means for like moving your view down to see what you're going to land on if you're like looking down a pit or some such. So that made levels tough to navigate. Yeah, I don't know. It's just, you know, it's early access and it's not like the most, having reviewed, I guess, a number of early access games, for this particular podcast, it didn't really make a great first impression. That doesn't mean that it can't later, after they've done more work on it and done some refining and updating and all that good stuff. But compared to some of the other things I've checked out in early access, it was definitely kind of like, okay, well, it's there. It's there.
Well, they plan to keep the price the same both during and beyond the early access period. It is $15. Is this something we should keep an eye on? Is this something we should invest in now? Or is this something that we should just wish list or ignore?
It feels harsh to say to just ignore it when it is so early on. Like, cause it could be a thing where, you know, the game comes around and like in a year you'll be like, oh, that was that game that they were talking about on that podcast, that I listened to. Someone would say that, I'm sure. They're like, oh, that's that. I wonder if that game has come around. Oh, look, yeah, it could come around and it could make a mark. Or you might just never hear from it again. It's just really tough to say at this point because it is so early on and I can't quite put my finger on like what it is about it that's going to make it like really stand out down the road. So I would say hold off with your dollars. There are so many games you could spend $15 on Steam. But you know, if that particular cocktail of things sounds interesting, like it is free to put it on your wish list.
Yeah,
for sure.
And that helps developers too. Wish lists help them. So
yep.
Last I checked, wish lists are free.
Yay. Yes, wishes are free.
All right, well, Tim, that is it for you.
It is.
Do you have any wishes before we set you free?
No.
Wow, nice.
No, I don't.
I want into the night.
A grand list.
Yeah, I will wisp on into the night and turn into a shooting star for others to make wishes upon.
Aww.
Or Coca-Cola flavors out of.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Bring it back. Look.
That's the way it could go. All right, well.
Night.
Yep. Good night.
Okay.
Later.
Brooke, are you sticking around or are you heading out
I'm going to stick around at least one more. I'm curious about this next one, actually.
Are you? Because the next one is Cult of the Lamb, developed by Massive Monster, published by Devolver Digital, released August 11th on Xbox One, Series X and S, Switch, PS4, PS5, and PC for $24.99. Start your own cult in a land of false prophets, venturing out into diverse and mysterious regions to build a loyal community of woodland followers and spread your word to become the one true cult. Purnell, what's going on in Cult of the Lamb?
Oh, crap. We're talking about Cult of the Lamb? I thought we were talking about a new flavor of Coca-Cola.
No.
Cult flavor. Oh,
that was the beginning of the episode.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
We passed.
Okay, that. I guess I'll talk about a video game instead then. Okay, so
Cult of the Lamb.
This tastes like what I assume lamb back from the dead to raise an undead god from beyond the lands of space and time. I assume that's what it would taste like.
Marshmallow.
So this game.
Got it. Whoa.
Exactly. You got it. The Stuff.
Oh, god, the Stuff.
It's such a creepy fucking movie.
Dude, it's like a movie we've connected on before, but enough.
Joe would go be like, God damn it, the cult, Purnell, the cult, get on the cult. So in this game, the premise is that at the very beginning, for unfortunate reasons, you are playing as a lamb who is being led to slaughter at the hands of four ungodly beings who run the world that you live in, and they are afraid that by letting lambs live, they will be providing a way for this one god that they do not wish to be reborn would be able to reach through, like basically use the lamb as a vessel. So they killed all the lambs, and you are the last remaining lamb in the world. You get killed. But then, unbeknownst to them, it is by murdering you that you are able to meet with this god, obtain his power, and which he uses to allow you to return back from dead under the premise, under the promise that you resurrect him by way of creating a cult that worships him and only him. And by getting enough power funneled to him through devotion and worship, he can come back from where he is. He can be unchained and brought back. Also, you have to defeat the four guys who killed you because they are also what are shackling him to his eternal prison. So, at the offset, you would think, especially if you look at a lot of the photos online, you were probably like, okay, here's another, you know, dungeon crawling roguelike game. And you would be about a quarter correct on that. Or sorry, a third correct on that. Because to be perfectly honest, the majority of this game is actually running the cult. So when you're actually set up and you get through the tutorial, you are placed in your main hub. It is essentially like a campground of sorts where animal followers can be brought to join your cult. And this is done by way of traversing the different lands that the cult leaders run. Initially, you come back with one follower. As you're running through the tutorial area, you'll be fighting through it by using either your melee attacks or your special magic attack, which you get. I'll talk about that in a little bit as I get to the main run. But on the way out of the tutorial area, you come across an animal who's about to be sacrificed. You rescue that animal. He becomes your very first follower. And once you get him back to the land, you are able to use him to allow you access to the first demon world, the Darkwood, run by Leshy, the whatever. And now this is when Leshy the game... Honestly, that's what his name should be, because I like that name. And this is when the game loop officially starts to begin, because they're at the first run of the dungeon, they don't hit you with any real responsibility. So you're just like free to run through the dungeon and do stuff. So you walk in and you pretty much kind of do a Slay the Spire sort of thing. You each node, there's like a map with nodes on it, and each node has multiple rooms. And in those rooms, you will be fighting monsters using, again, your melee weapon attack or your special attack given to you at the beginning of a run. You'll clear the rooms, get treasure at the end of each room by clearing said room, and eventually get to the end of the node. And once that happens, you'll be able to choose your next node, each one representing a number of different events based on the symbol on it. You might find a shop that sells new weapons to you, which could eventually also show up in your run as your default weapon when you start a run. You'll come across different events like a guy who gives you tarot cards, each one unlocking special traits for your character for the run, such as, you know, increased, you know, energy for your special attacks when you kill monsters, or more money, whatever. And this is pretty much the process you run through, going from node to node, including occasionally coming across additional followers that you can recruit until you get to the end of the node. Sometimes you'll get various events related to the god, because this game is actually surprisingly story-driven, too. So this isn't the typical roguelike where you'll be running the dungeons forever, I guess, unless you're really not looking to progress. But the game does pretty much propel you forward. So you'll get a couple story events here and there. Now, once you're done a run and you go back to the hub, this first time you go back, this is when things start happening, because now you have to bring a follower onto your flock. You have to go in and pretty much recruit him. Say, hey, welcome to the fold, buddy. And then you got to start feeding them. You got to go to create. Oh, first, you got to clean up around this field and collect like stone and wood, like harvesting either by yourself or by sending your followers to do it. Then use your resources to create things such as, I guess, a pot to cook food. A shrine for them to go into and worship you, and just other amenities like places for them to sleep. All kinds of stuff that you'd expect to do in something like Animal Crossing.
I was about to ask, did this turn into Animal Crossing?
It kind of did.
Even
but
more
I
of a cult.
Oh, yes. This is even. it's true. It's actually much more of a cult, and I'll admit also much more fun, too.
Can't wait for the crossover where Tom Nook murders this entire village.
Same. Oh, no, that would be you as Tom. You're pretty much Tom Nook in this case, because if you really felt like it, you could murder your entire village, because there are a number of features that factor into this game, like as far as management goes. For example, when you feed the animals, sometimes they poop or puke based on the food they ate. If you leave it too long without cleaning it up, your cult members will start to get sick. If they start to get too sick, they will pretty much die off, or they will essentially like default or deflect from your cult and just like disappear, maybe even taking people with them, whatever. So you pretty much had to run around and constantly clean up after your different animal followers too.
Clean up your own shit.
Pick up the shit. But on the positive, the shit actually has benefits, because you turn it into fertilizer, which you can use to harvest your crops, because you farm too. Yes, you farm in this game, and you also fish. Like, you do all the stuff that you would typically do for, like, a town-building sim. And it's legitimately fun. Now, when you go on the dungeon runs, if you don't keep they'll start to kind of starve and do things while you're away. So if you don't keep them well-fed, your villagers can get hungry and stuff while you're away. So you can't just, like, dungeon dive forever. You have to come back and take care of your town. Now, I described all the typical sim-based stuff, but I didn't talk about the stuff that makes this a cult. So let's get to that. Once you build a shrine for them to come in and listen to listen to you, and also a outdoor shrine for them to stand and worship you, a few things happen. When they worship around the shrine, which you have to pretty much command them to do, say, hey, my command to these three followers is, when you have free time, go worship at the shrine. They will generate devotion points for you. And when you hit a certain plateau, whenever they worship you, you collect enough of it, you'll start unlocking like upgrades to your abilities to build your base, whether it be creating beds or lumber yards or stone yards, a number of different things you can construct based off of how much devotion they give you. They sometimes will give you side quests, and by fulfilling those side quests, they'll also level up and give you devotion. Why do you want them to level up? Well, a few reasons, really. One, they might work harder for you when they level up, because they're, you know, just better, you know, cult followers. And also, they're worth more when you sacrifice them to the hells, because you can also sacrifice followers if you feel unworthy of your presence, or ones that are kind of shit-talking you to other cult followers, because that happens sometimes when their devotion starts to fade away. You can really go to church and just say, sacrifice you, and everyone will stand around a summon circle, and the guy in the middle go, what the hell's going on? A tentacle will come out of the ground and suffocate him and drag him to hell. It's freaking weird, because they're all cute while this is happening. You can
deliver
sermons.
Which of us did you kill?
Oh, well, I mean, I didn't name any of the animals after you guys. I mean, these are mystical.
Thanks.
Well, I don't want to bring my friends into the cult. And to be perfectly honest, from what I could tell, though, I guess if a dissenter kicks in, that's one thing. But if my followers are doing good by me, I'm a benevolent cult leader. I don't want to kill any of them. And from what I could tell, you can get the gains that they give you from killing them by just being a good cult leader and keeping them alive and happy and fed.
Nice.
So you can pretty much, you'll call them and you can give sermons. The sermons will keep your faith level up because you don't want your faith level to get too low for your group as a whole. You can do different things to generate, I guess, like new crown abilities. So basically ways for your, you know, I mean, new abilities for your crown, like more strengths for you to do while you're running through dungeons. And lastly, though probably not lastly, but I've spent a lot of time talking about this game. You can also essentially construct tablets to build commandments. So for every three or four, I can't remember the total, three or four pieces that you find of a commandment tab slab, which you get from different activities in the game, you are allowed to produce one new doctrine. And the doctrines come across five different categories, and each time you choose one, there's like a one or the other sort of situation where it's like, hey, do you want to make it so that your followers can be asked to give you tithings? Or do you want to make it so that your followers are less concerned about money and are more willing to work hard for you and produce more resources when they harvest and stuff? Of course, I said, give me my money. But you can do stuff like that, and you'll pretty much slowly make your followers more capable of, you know, serving you. It's interesting in how this game works, because as you may well have noticed, I didn't talk a great deal about the actual dungeon runs, because at their core, they're pretty straightforward, basic stuff. I mean, you have an attack button and a special attack button and a dodge roll. Like, it doesn't, I mean, it's fun, but it doesn't do anything particularly special. And though the cult building takes up the majority of the time, especially when you start going to the actual locations around the cult base and, like, meet people, play mini games and fish and crap, you start to realize that takes up the majority of the time. Now, the dungeon running part, if that was the entire game, I would not say this is particularly worth anything. It's like, eh, it's small potatoes. If the cult part was its own game, and possibly a little cheaper, I probably would say that game by itself is worth the money. But the two together, between the gameplay and the cuteness and the horror humor and all that stuff, this
getting
game
to
is
sacrifice
a
Jacob over and over and over is priceless.
So you're telling me you would just bring in new followers each time, customize them, because by the way, you can choose which species they are and what color they are, and like just a number of just general traits to say, hey, this new worshiper is my new follower. And then, of course, you can name them. You tell me you would construct them in such a way that they all would be named Jacob, and you just have like 25 Jacobs running around your convent, and then eventually just sacrificing them one by one.
That would be hilarious.
Because you could have a bunch of them that look exactly the same, and they're all named Jacob. If you really wanted to do that. Just sack that you come for a sermon, like these like these 12 green reindeer just walking like, oh,
Cornell just sold the game.
And they're the there ones pooping is. Everywhere. It's Jacob, so it fits.
Crap, and that means you wouldn't even clean up after. You just let them all get sick. You monster.
They'll die as they lived.
So apparently there's some friggin' awesome Twitch integration as well, at least on the, from what I see, the PC version.
Yeah, this is whack.
That lets viewers join the cult and they can vote whether or not to help or hinder you playing.
That actually sounds like it would be pretty damn fun. And it definitely goes along with, like I said earlier, how dissenters can show up in the camp and start shit talking you to other followers. Because I didn't even mention this part. Let's say you're walking around the camp and you see two followers talking to each other, because they actually have conversations. You don't see the word bubbles or nothing, but you see their facial expressions and all. If you walk up to one of them and start talking to them while they're in their conversation, they actually get mad at you. And it affects their rating towards you. You have to let them have conversations, leave them the hell alone, and catch up with them when they're done. It's the first time that happened, I was extremely shocked and happy to see, like, wow, these guys, they have their own lives here. And if I fuck it up, they're going to dislike me for it. These animals know shit. Nice. And they ain't messing around. So at the end of the day, this is a game that when I first saw it get announced, it was like, oh, here comes another one of those games trying to hit that old edge button. But at the same time, I also get that a well-done game is a well-done game, as we learned earlier from me loving the hell out of Hellpie. It doesn't have to just be edgy for edge's sake. If a good game is in there, then it's a good package and it's worth your time.
One's over the top. This is only T-rated.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Like, this isn't the sort of game where I feel like they did a theme and then just said, okay, now we got the theme to shock people. Let's make a shitty game. No, this is a theme that works for the context of the game. And the game context is a lot of fun. Like, you will enjoy this game as long as you're okay with the premise and theme.
That's awesome.
I definitely enjoyed it. It's a good time. Brooke, buy it, because it sounds like you already were genuinely interested in it. Grab this motherfucker.
I was excited to see the lineup. I didn't know you were covering this, and I'm looking at all these screenshots for it now. It looks awesome. This looks right up my alley.
There's just something bafflingly adorable about seeing a lamb, a cartoon lamb, hovering in the sky with red eyes dripping. I don't know why, but it's adorable. And I was happy to see it. Like, wow, they did this right. It's really good stuff. I am genuinely
sad that the Devolver Digital Shop sold out of the official plushie for this game.
Oh no! That was
they had a 10-inch plushie for $36.66.
Looking this up, and then I'm going to beat a guy for their plushie because I want it.
There's a dude selling some on Amazon that are kind of similar. That they have, it's like a 2-pack for $30 or something like that. There's two of them, but I would want the official one if I could get one.
That's cool, so precious. He even has a little red cape and everything.
Devolver, hook us up. We'll do a giveaway.
I'll test it, and we'll do a review of the stuffed animal.
You want to review the stuffed animal?
They do at least say there's more on the way, so hopefully that just means they're going to produce others after this.
Nice. Well, again, the game $24.99. What is your official verdict?
Oh, absolutely a buy. Like that, without question. This game is a fun romp. Again, just take it as an entire package. Don't just come here being like, I'm going to run some dungeons, because that's not what the game's meant to be. Take it as it is as a whole. You'll love it.
Nice. All right, next up is Blossom Tales 2, The Minotaur Prince, developed by Castle Pixel, published by Playtonic Friends, released August 16th on the Switch for $14.99. Grandpa's latest tale takes you on a journey through haunted forests, pirate shores, and other mysterious lands across a vast open world. Charming towns, terrible enemies, tricky puzzles, and powerful weapons await you. Chris, tell us about your time in Blossom Tales 2, The Minotaur Prince.
All right, Blossom Tales 2. Well, finally, we have a sequel to Blossom Tales, which I quite sang that game's praises quite early on. I think that was one of the earlier Switch games I reviewed, in fact. Anyways, yeah, so now we finally got our sequel, and even though the original game is, you know, inspired by Zelda, they did not go with an absurdly hard side-scrolling take on the same formula. They in fact did what everybody wanted Nintendo to do back in the day, and they just made a second thing, and it's a little bit better. So that is do what?
A blossom to the past.
Exactly. That's actually a great way of putting it.
Carnage said, so, "Blossom Tales 2 is the protagonist Joey Lawrence."
Christ.
Us oldsters get that reference.
Oh, absolutely. My back hurts.
Yeah. Actually, my chair has been kind of making my back hurt lately because I've been sitting in it really badly.
The geriatric podcast.
You gotta
here
get
we
a
go.
Pillow to sit on. Nice soft cushion that you put under you. I'll make you feel good.
That's pretty good.
Ergonomics are no joke.
No, it's true.
Gotta catch the Rubik's Cube.
Okay, so yes. Speaking of old men, so Blossom Tales 2 is once again presented in the context of an old man talking to telling a story to his grandchildren. We got Lily, who we will remember from the last game, and her brother Chris, who I don't remember if he appears in the original game.
Just in the storytelling sequence.
Okay, yeah. So he's a little bit more of a has a more of a role in this particular story, but you know, he's still not like a fully playable character, at least not for the part of the games I played. But yeah, we once again join Lily. However, the setting is completely different, so it's not, you know, although the Sleeping King does make an appearance as the first boss in the game, which is kind of cool. And in fact, like I said, the game is very Zelda-inspired. It's one of those kind of things where one of the first items that you get is a lantern, and the way that, you know, you have to this is a slight spoilers, I'm sorry, for the almost tutorial part of the game. but yeah, it involves the lighting the four torches that are in the room puzzle in order to proceed, you know. So we've definitely got Zelda in spades here. Speaking of spades, I actually just picked up the shovel, so there you go. So yeah, basically, as you progress through the game, it is an overworld adventure game like Zelda. A little, you know, it's definitely more like expanded and expounded, and this game introduces like some new elements. However, it's been so long since I played the last game that I can't tell you exactly what's totally new in this game, but I will say that a lot of it is going to involve, you know, the usual picking up tools to advance to the next area. You assign them to buttons like in Link's Awakening. You get things like if you get bombs and a bow and arrow and things like that, your ammunition is not determined by pickups, but rather by a magic meter that you have. So a little bit more like a Link Between Worlds in that way. This one also gives you a fully fledged like alchemy system where you can now create potions that do everything from restore your life or give you like a free revival if you get murdered in battle, which, you know, those are normal things, to things like allowing you to shoot fireballs and also have like a magic orb like shield around you and like different cool things, or run really fast. There's like lots of customization in how you want your character to like operate, because like I said, only the like core elements like that you need to get from dungeon to dungeon, you know, are just laid out in front of you, but the rest you kind of get to discover in a little bit more of an open way. So I like that quite a lot. There's even fishing in the game, and fish are, you know, part of the alchemy system. There's also a trading system where you can trade for stuff as well as purchasing stuff with money, which are actually gold coins instead of, you know, rupees. You know, and it's to do things like search out pieces of heart container, you know, four of them gets you another heart and things like that. Like, there's a lot to recognize in this game, but the entire package is put together so lovingly and beautifully, even more beautifully than the last one, that you almost just kind of, you're like, you know, I'm comparing this to Zelda, but honestly, this is kind of surpassing some of those games, you know, because it's got that modern take feel to it. I dare say that I would probably recommend this game over Link's Awakening to somebody who has played neither.
Wow. So, yeah. Link's Awakening is my favorite, so you're saying a lot.
Well, to someone who's never played either, though, so they don't have the nostalgia for Link's Awakening. Because for one thing, like, you know, if you look at the map in this game, not only does it actually show you, like, you know, a smaller version of what you see in the real world, kind of like, you know, Link to the Past, but it highlights the area where you need to go next, which is really great because, again, it's open world, so when you're exploring, it's really nice to be able to rope yourself into the next plot point. Also, it does really charming things. Like, for instance, you might run into a screen where some frogs are attacking from the north of the river. The game will pause, and the granddaughter, Lily, will complain that she hates frogs, so she wants them to be honey badgers. And then you, the player, get to decide, oh, which one did Lily fight? Did she fight the frogs, or did she fight some honey badgers? And the game will change accordingly. So it's like there's different things. Like, the game will, like, remind you ever so often that this is a story being told to somebody in real time. So it's a really, like, charming way of, like, kind of treating the characters in the game. Like, the monsters and the villains or whatever in the game often end up with, like, this kind of charm to them because, like, for instance, you go to fight the first prime mate, who is the monkey leader of the pirates, and that's where you want to get your bombs in the game. This is very early in the game, so I'm not spoiling too much, I guess. But, like, when he's speaking to you, he's very erudite and very, like, you know, well-mannered and stuff. And then Lily's like, stop messing around, Grandpa. You know what monkeys sound like. And then the monkey starts going, ooh, ee, ee. And then, like, the boy comes in and is, you know, Chris is like, no, I like the smart monkey. And he's like, excuse me, I don't know what came over me. And then continues his conversation. Like, this game, yeah, this game turns the charisma up to 20. And versus the prior game, which already was really good, I really like that they've cleaned up, like, the animation. The motion feels a little bit better. Like, the play controls feel a little bit better. I dare say even the music's a little bit better. I had high praise for the soundtrack of the last game, and I repeat that for this one. The soundtrack is killer. The dungeons are puzzly and, like, but not overwhelming. Some of them will seem really familiar, like, you know, some of the, you'll see a puzzle and you'll be like, oh, I remember this. But, you know, sometimes they do throw in some stuff that's, like, you know, kind of fresh. So yeah, there's a God, it's real easy to recommend this one, because I already love the original game, and they've kept everything from the original, except they've made it a little bit better for this time around. So, I mean, that's kind of what, like I said, everybody wanted originally with Zelda.
Fall into the abyss of my gaping butthole.
That's Blossom Tales.
I'm glad to hear you say that, because I couldn't wait and I bought it this morning.
Nice.
Blossom Tales deserves to be bought off of a sale. It's freaking good.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Lloyd Berry raiding us with a couple of viewers. Thank you so much, Lloyd, for the raid.
Oh my God. I didn't even look. I didn't know Lloyd was here. What's up, Lloyd?
I can't get over how fucking funny it is to just randomly sit here and hear Jacob's voice go, fall into the abyss of my gaping butthole. Because that's our raid sound. That is...
Hooray. Hooray.
Jacob.
You're going to have to play that sample now on the actual episode.
I mean, it plays automatically.
Oh, so was it just going while I was talking?
Yeah, it played while you were talking. Nice. Here, I'll play it again.
Fall into the abyss of my gaping butthole.
There we go. So
yeah, I gotta mute because it's always a few seconds behind for me. I don't know if it's like that for y'all.
Yeah, it's that's the beauty of Twitch. But yeah, 15 nice. Bucks. Your official verdict, Chris?
Oh yeah, absolutely buy this one. And go buy the original while you're at it. It goes on some pretty nice sales nowadays, so you have no excuse.
Nice.
These are extremely charming games, and I do not recommend that you sleep on them, especially since I'm sure the next one's going to come out in another 5 years, and it'll be amazing too.
Drop it, bitch!
Maybe it will be side-scrolling.
Oh, also worth noting, though, I didn't feel like waiting because I didn't want to drop that kind of coin just yet. Apparently, LRG is doing physicals for this one this time.
Ooh. Oh yeah, somebody did physicals for the last one. I don't remember who it was. Was it Limited Run?
Maybe so. I mean, I didn't know they did, so that's probably why it was likely then.
I was gonna say I'm glad that's announced right away, because I think the original didn't have a physical release for a long time, and then it like came out from one of the small batch guys. I almost bought it again, but then I was like, I don't know.
Well, speaking of dropping coins, Stagorilla came in and dropped some biddies, 500 biddies to be exact. Thank you so, so much for the biddies.
Thank you.
And thank you for hanging out. We love having you here. Speaking of love having you here, Brooke, we love having you here. Are you going to stick around any longer, or are you heading out?
I'm going to pop off. It's time for some actual real-life McDonald's right now.
Oh,
right.
I mean, real-life McDonald's as opposed to not real McDonald's?
As opposed to goth McDonald's.
Yeah.
Because we got our McDonald's goth.
Thank you. Oh,
if McDonald's isn't meant to be goth, I don't want it to be right.
I appreciated all the Bible lore and Bible fanfic we kind of got tonight. ended up being an unintentional theme of the episode. You know, evil Bible and church shits in every Otome game, like most Japanese stuff. So it really brings an eerie air. I like that.
Nice. Glad you enjoyed.
Well, I'm going to go, y'all. I'll see you next week.
Have a good night.
Later, y'all. Bye.
All right. Next up is Super Bullet Break, developed by Beckside, published by P-Cube, released August 12th on Switch, PS4, and PC for $19.99. Super Bullet Break is a one-of-a-kind strategy deck builder filled with a wild bunch of cute and colorful characters, each and every one of them unique in their own way.
Unique.
Rescue online gamers from total destruction in a world where online multiplayer games have been taken over by a rogue AI. Can you save the world, defeat enemies in strategic turn-based battles, and beat Super Bullet? Bullet Break. Brunel, did you?
No.
I didn't hear thing there.
Nothing. I didn't beat shit.
You didn't beat
because
shit.
Because this game is really tough. Not to say it in a bad way, because the game is also quite fun, spoiler already for my review, but yeah, this game ain't easy. So the premise of this game is that, I guess, as you already said, the video game world's kind of under siege by something called like the Buggos or something, which are corrupting the games on, I guess, these kids' Switches or also just the gamerscape. I don't know. An NPC of sorts kind of reaches out beyond the game to request help from a girl who then in turn eventually gets her friends involved too. And they collectively work together to try to save the Gamerverse. And this is done by way of, well, playing the games. You are able to adventure to one of seven different video game worlds, though you have to unlock them one at a time. And the way it works is that at the beginning, you choose a character. And that character has a default ability and also a default, basically like a default like deck. And this game is referred to as a magazine because your deck, or rather your magazine, is actually composed of bullets. Those bullets are actually characters from the games themselves. I'm going to stop using the terminology once I lay down what it's used because I hate it for the scope of reviewing the game. The magazine is considered basically cards. Cards are bullets. And a cartridge is a modification to each of these bullets or cards or whatever. So now that I've said all that, I'm not saying it again because the terms will make this more confusing than it needs to be. Each character, when you select them, has their own set of cards that they use for their deck. When you go into combat, you sort of kind of get like like the last game I reviewed, a node tree. Similar to Slay the Spire, only usually can get to like four or five different rows, though you can only always select from like two to three at a time. When you go on a level, you can choose which way you want to go. There's a number of different events you can come across, whether it be, I won't talk about those yet. I'll talk about the main one, which is typically a battle. When you select a battle node, you'll go into combat and you'll see the adversaries in the top of the screen and all your currently loaded set of bullets or your cards at the bottom of the screen. By default, you typically end up with five at a time, but you can sometimes hold more. On a turn, you'll look up at the top of the screen. There's sort of a timeline, kind of like how Grandia would do it or something like that, where there's a number of different blocks, each one representing a turn or an action. And then you'll see the characters and where the monsters fall within that. You'll have the characters that you can select from to use as attacks. And each of those characters takes up a multiple slots. So I might have an archer who will fire an arrow at an enemy. They'll take up three blocks. The enemy that I'm going to attack is four blocks away. So that's an optimal attack to use because I'll get to attack the enemy. And then I have enough time to do one more attack before the enemy gets a turn. Now, that's a pretty basic description because all these characters have a variety of different traits associated with them. Some characters will give you shield boosts, which will work as kind of like a damage buffer, and some will give you armor boosts, which also works as a damage buffer. But the difference being that armor carries over between attack rounds, whereas shields only work for one attack round. Some characters have really weird abilities, such as the burst ability, where you will be able to do more damage based on the number of bullets or cards rather that you've used prior to using that character card, but also before an enemy attacks. Healing cards, you have weird things like heart explosion, where each time you use a card that has the heart explosion trait, you build up a meter up to 100, and then you'll do special damage related to that when it hits 100. Like, there's a lot of weird, varied rules that takes place based on the character cards you're using while you play. It makes for some interesting scenarios as you're progressing through battles and choosing who you're going to use. After you actually somehow, if you're lucky, win a battle, though, because the enemies do not play around from the very beginning. They hit like trucks. So if you don't kill them and you take too much damage, woofing nougat, you're dead. But in the event that you do win battles, you'll be able to choose a reward. Usually it'll be between three different character bullets or whatever. And they all come with different traits. The characters themselves, the cards, I'll say, whatever. Their base trait will always be the same. So if Rui always attacks twice and her attack power is 6, every time you come across that character, that's what his stats and traits will be. However, the cartridge or the modification element that comes with each bullet or card. God, I hate this terminology. that makes things special and unique because even though Rui can always attack twice for a damage of six, if she has if the game gives her the right cartridge, she might also do two extra damage for her attack, or she might cost less to play, or any number of things. There's a lot of different modification cartridges that you can unlock while playing through the game, and it actually makes for a lot of fun when you're coming across these characters. Aside from normal battles, you'll come across the occasional shop where you can use money earned in battle to purchase one-time use items, or, you know, just passive items, or even scout tickets, which can be used to quote-unquote scout for new characters that you can recruit. That's a fun thing. You come across rest stops sometimes where you can spend money to heal up 50% of your health, or for free swap a cartridge, basically taking a character who has one trait and say, nah, I like this character, but I want to give them a better one. I've never used that because I always need to heal when I get there, so whoopsie doodle. But if you're a person that can avoid all the battles essentially and just get right to those spots, you'll likely be swapping cartridges like a bandit. And then there's like various town events, so to speak, where you'll come across a town character. You might get quizzed with the invention potential to win something. You might be asked a question, asked to battle, any number of different things. And then, of course, last but not least, items. Sometimes you'll come across a block where it's like three card Monty, where you'll choose one of the three blocks and you'll get a reward based on which block you choose. But aside from all those things, you also end up occasionally fighting bosses. They play just like any normal battle, except they're harder and longer, because of course they are. Now,
phrasing.
The big gimmick, phrasing, oh, of course. and it's kind of funny how appropriate it is, because I guess the main gimmick, which you'll probably see if you look at any screenshots for this game, is that all the characters in this game are girls, anime girls that are animated by different artists. And the art in this game is honestly legitimately good, and they give all the characters their own unique backstories and stuff with our game universes, and they're all voiced too. So they put a lot of care into just like kind of getting this artwork and these voices and characterizing everybody. And there's even an NPC every once in a while you'll come across where she'll quiz you based on the characterizations of these characters. And if you can get it right, you'll actually get a prize for it. She might be like, what is such and such's favorite food? And it's like, what? I don't fucking know. Just use the characters to fight. I don't know their special hobbies and traits, but if you want to look at it, all that stuff, you can win some cool rewards from a certain NPC. And essentially, when you die, though, it's interesting how this game works, because two things. One, everything I've read, and I can agree with it, says that they intended for this game to be sort of like a cash-free gacha game.
Yeah.
Being, you start out with a character. That's
how they advertise it on the store page. They say, gotcha without microtransactions.
And I honestly feel like that's a very accurate way to put it, which is also a large part of why I like the game and also hate the game at the same time, because your runs are completely randomly driven. Aside from the main character you choose and what their build out is, you're going in hoping for whatever magic luck you get. Every battle you fight is random. Every prize you get is random. Everything that's available at the different stops is random. The map layout, random. Like, you're basically planning within chaos in hopes of beating levels. But the wild trade-off to this is you also don't get rewards aside from unlocking different things when you die either. So you live, you die, you repeat. There is no, well, this time my character's a bit stronger. At best, you might say, okay, there's a chance for this character to show up in my gotcha scenario, or this cartridge to show up in my gotcha scenario. But if you treat this game as a pick-up-and-play game, as in I'm going to pick it up, I'm going to do a round, see how far I can get in this level or whatever, you're in good shape. Because I feel like that's how the game was intended to be played. I feel like the only real thing that might hurt this game, in a sense, is if someone's really struggling with the first area and they don't have the tenacity to just stick it out, because then they might find themselves feeling like they don't want to keep doing the same realm over and over again out of seven realms in the game. But otherwise, nah. You'll persevere. You'll keep seeing new cards come up in your roulette wins. You'll keep seeing cool effects, and hopefully you'll eventually get a handle on the mechanics. there's only one real gripe I came across as far as the interface is concerned, and this could well be them like PQ writing in and saying, nah, Pernell, you're just a doofus. Here's what you're supposed to do. But the game, when you are playing the main game proper, right, if you're scrolling over your different characters to choose who you want to use in combat, the game will show you what their base ability is, what their base attack is, and all that stuff. But it does not show you what their cartridge effect is. You can see the symbol for the cartridge, but you're not going to remember what the symbols represent. So the only way you're able to actually look at what the cartridge effect is by actually going into the magazine details, which is essentially where they show you what every card you have is, and then finding it in the list and going, oh, that's what the cartridge ability is. And while I am glad you can do that, I feel like if you're already in a situation where you can scroll between each character and see what they can do, it should include what their cartridge effect is, too. It just makes sense to me. But that is really the only real gripe I had. Like, I've been very much enjoying this game despite sucking royally at it, because, again, it's not that I don't understand the game. It's that it's just tough. Like, yeah. It's not an easy play. And for those who end up picking this game up and being like what I originally did, where it was like, man, they don't tell you shit. They just throw you in the game. Well, they do that. However, there is a manual option in the game, and you can use the manual option to just pretty much review a number of really good bullet points where they'll just explain the game to you and the different like abilities you can get. Like, they explain Heart Explosion and Charm and combos, and they explain pretty much a good chunk of the different things you can get in this game. Drone usage and all that. It's a good setup. And there's also like a YouTube video that the company put out there that gives you like the kind of the 411 basics on like building a good deck. See, even they call it a deck. They're like, we're not going to call it a magazine tutorial. We're going to call it a deck tutorial. But I get it. They might have thematics and all that. They wanted to be within theme of what they built. And I'm okay with that, because at the end of the day, this game is legit. It's a fun time. I think you'll have fun with it. And even if you're kind of like, ooh, waifu art or whatever, none of it's really provocative. There is no, you know, white anime titties in this game or nothing like that. Even though I've seen a number of videos on YouTube like, anime titty game. Like, it's not a fucking anime titty game. Stop mis-selling the product. It's a good game. Pick it up. Just know that it does not hold your hand, and you're going to work for those wins.
Cool. $20. Your thoughts?
I think it's a solid buy game. And the fun fact about it, I pre-ordered the physical day one edition. I'm contemplating not keeping it, not because I don't like the game, but because I'm a really cheap bastard. And I already don't technically own the game.
On the show? What?
I'm totally allowed to say that. I'm like, I got a review copy so I can get my physical cash back, but I'm probably going to still get the physical because I'm not sure. But what this really does lean down to is, if I was listening to myself review this game, I would be content knowing that I have a good game coming, because it is a good game. But I also already have it. So decisions, decisions. Anyway, that's the review. A solid game. Pick it up. You won't regret it, unless you're frustrated with difficulty, in which case,
but for now, buy it. You got your own verdict to go with. Buy it. Next game to talk about is Book Quest, developed by Nerd Games and East Asia Soft, published by East Asia Soft, released August 10th on Xbox One, Series X and S, Switch, PS4, PS5, and PC for $6.99. Book Quest is an action RPG adventure presented in retro pixel art style, featuring cinematic cutscenes and dialogue. Throughout this medieval fantasy, gameplay alternates between top-down and side-scrolling perspectives. Chris, what is going on in Book Quest?
All right, so Book Quest, we have another video game that is heavily inspired by the Legend of Zelda series. You play as the boy. I'm not exactly sure what his name is. Let's call him Book Quest. No, I don't know. But yeah, basically, you live in a house, and you like a thing that you have is a magic book from your grandfather that you know, you don't exactly know. It's just a family heirloom. You don't really know what the significance is of it until it gets stolen and your granddad's ghost comes by and he's like, hey, you got to get that book back. It's significant. And you're like, okay, I'm going to do it. And so you get a broom from your house and go about on your quest. So basically, it is it's a top-down, for the most part, kind of action-adventure game where you find better gear, solve puzzles, and, you know, try to defeat the enemies in a certain like kind of area until you get to the boss or you defeat the boss, and then, you know, you can proceed to the next thing. You know, the same formula we've all come to know and love. This one likes to shake it up, however, by, you know, once in a while, changing the perspective from like a top down to maybe a side scroller, and then having you do different things that are like familiar, but, you know, maybe not so much. So like there's a stage where you have to, you actually for some reason cannot use your weapon. However, you can jump, and you can jump right on the enemy's heads, and it's a side scrolling kind of thing. So it just becomes a very light side scrolling platformer for one screen. There's no context given for this. It's not really explained or anything. The game is just, you know, wanting this to happen. Same thing when you're trying to get to the top of a cave to fight a dragon. You have to jump on platforms, and it's like that one game I reviewed years ago called Jumping Joe and Friends, but it's basically you would use either left or right on the controller to do your jumps, and so if you're on like the left platform and you want to, and the next one up is on the right platform, you press right. But then if there's one also to the right that's right above that other platform, you still press right to jump straight up. And because the screen is auto-scrolling, you have to do it quickly. And that's pretty cool. One thing that I'm got a little stuck on, honestly, could not get myself unstuck, is that bosses are very unforgiving. I am hiding behind a tree while a dragon breathes fire at me and then drops down briefly to become, you know, vulnerable. And, you know, every time I go out to attack this guy, like, you're supposed to dodge these fireballs. I'm not even sure if the game knows that you can hide behind a tree to, like, you know, get cover. But, yeah, it's like, it's one of those kind of Dark Souls things where the bosses have these huge life bars, but they can kill you very, very quickly. And as you drop their health, then little dragons come out and, like, chase you around and stuff and can also do damage. And it's just like, yo, I've only got one sword and it does 3 damage to this guy. Like, this is ridiculous. So, you know, light adventuring, light puzzles, super heavy bosses. And yeah, basically the game, you know, you get to meet characters and you do little side quests for them and stuff. And, you know, like mine right now is to try and defeat this dragon while this lunatic who probably stole my granddad's book is laughing from a hot air balloon, which is you know, a very silly place to be maniacally laughing from. And yeah, it's pretty charming. The English is a little bit broken, I'm not gonna lie. It's a little awkwardly written, but I think it does its job for being a lower price game for sure, and it certainly brings the challenge very unexpectedly. The only real gripe I have with it is that I am stuck in this boss fight. The game auto-saves, and it will not let you backtrack once you get past a certain point. So it's not exactly open. It's a little bit more on rails than other games. And so at this point, I'm not sure that, you know, maybe I missed like a more important or a stronger weapon or a more important item or something like that, or, you know, some weakness that this dragon would have that, you know, would let me maybe defeat it in less than 100 attempts. But I can't know that, because when I load my one and only save, it will not let me backtrack to other parts of the map or talk to anybody else. I can't go backwards through those side-scrolling or, you know, up-scrolling parts of the game. So in that sense, I'm just kind of like, you know, just kind of dealing with it.
Well, $7. What are your thoughts on the game overall?
$7, I think it's a try it. You know, you can get, you know, at the $7 level, you can probably get a more fully fledged adventure. But I will say this is not without its charm. And like I said, I do like when a game does kind of prevent, or does kind of throw brick walls at you every now and then. So yeah, it's, you know, it is like kind of firmly in the middle in terms of, you know, between try it and buy it. So I'm going to go ahead and, be safe and lean on try it.
Sounds good. Yeah. All right, we got one final game to talk about tonight. That is called Timothy and the Tower of Mu, developed by Kibu Entertainment, published by Playism, released August 9th on Steam for $11.99. Ascend the tower to save your grandfather in this classic hardcore action platformer. The Tower of Mu is waiting for you. Push past each checkpoint to the next awaiting challenge, dashing, jumping, and slinging your way up to the tower's peak. Die, learn, overcome, Purnell, talk, review.
They pretty much said the whole spiel right there, because you are pretty much doing exactly that. Timothy is on a honestly, this kid has the worst friggin' look. Apparently, this is a sequel to a previous Timothy game, which I remember from back in the day, that kind of played like a Zelda game, only a Zelda game where he didn't really have a weapon. In that game, he was on a quest to save his grandfather, who was dying from illness. He went out, he discovered a magic mushroom. The magic mushroom cured his grandfather. The downside, however, is that that same magic mushroom, a year later, was determined to be cursed. And the curse was that a year later, the person who used the mushroom would die from consuming it. So, in another fit of desperation to save his grandfather's life, Timothy decides to climb the Tower of Mew, where he learned that by reaching the top, he will have his wish granted. Which, of course, he's going to wish for his grandfather's life. His grandfather is old and will probably die much sooner than he thinks from old age, considering how many times you're going to die in this game from just, well, playing a difficult game. I don't know. Timothy, what are you doing, bro? But I'm not here to talk about Timothy's life choices. I'm here to talk about the game in which he is featured in. And how that game works is that, kind of like how your description was from the PR, you start at the bottom and the pretty much the desert that contains it, the tower, and you are tasked with scaling it. You go from screen to screen, and you are pretty much just trying to get to the next area, whether it's a door, a vine that goes upwards, or whatever. And this is done by maneuvering through usage of a jump. Holding it down longer gives you a higher jump. There's a dash ability, which allows you to dash in the air as well as on the ground. And lastly, your slingshot attack, which can be used to harm opponents that are approaching you. It's kind of funny that he's fighting giant monsters with a slingshot that fires what looks like essentially a bubble, but I digress. The game itself is pretty freaking brutal. Like, it doesn't pull punches at all. You get pretty much a set number of hearts that you can use throughout the game. If you lose it, if you take too much damage, you run out of hearts, you will die. When you die, you will be sent back to the last checkpoint you reach. Now, here's the rub, though, or one of the rubs. You will be sent back to that checkpoint with the same amount of health you had when you first reached the checkpoint. There are no full health restores here from checkpoints. So be wise with how you progress and how you decide to activate checkpoints. There have been a few times where I reached checkpoints and didn't have any healing items and said, you know what, screw it, I'm just going to kill myself and do the section again. It's more economical for me to do that. But there are places in the game where you can be healed. So it's not a complete loss. Sometimes you'll come across a fountain which will heal you. And also there are like shops in the game that are run by a character that Timothy apparently knows that sells healing items to you. So when you come across those, of course, spend the gold you've been finding, whether it be in treasure chests or from drops on enemies, to purchase food items that can heal one, two, or all of Timothy's health. While you're moving around the game, progressing across platforms and exploring, you'll find yourself swimming and grabbing onto ledges and hooks sometimes. When this occurs, Timothy has a stamina gauge. When he's on ledges and like when he's hanging from ledges, the stamina gauge will slowly decrease. If you let it run out, you will let go and you will fall, most likely to your death. So when you are doing hanging and jumping sequences, don't screw around. Get it done. Swimming sequences, the stamina gauge actually changes it to an oxygen meter. And if you run out of oxygen, Timothy will drown. So don't mess around in the water. Get it done. So the one thing about this game that's interesting to me in a good way is that I like the fact that this is pretty much not quite a MassoCore platformer, though it doesn't screw around difficulty-wise, but they at least give you a narrative as you're playing around the game. You do meet cool characters. You do have, like, dialogue exchanges. You are sent on, like, individual little quests, sometimes involving being sent to one of the game's dungeons within the dungeon to retrieve a crystal or an item for somebody. But at the same time, one thing that I do dislike about the game, though, it's likely by design, so I'm not hating on the game as a whole, just informative, is that you don't get special abilities or anything. Timothy's kit is Timothy's kit. You're slinging, you're dashing, and you're jumping till your legs and hands and eyes and hurt, and that's just the way it is. That's the life of Timothy, the Mew Scaler. But that doesn't make it bad. In fact, I think the game is quite addictive. It has that certain charm to it where you're, you know, pretty much going from, you're on one screen, you see a giant, you know, four-bladed buzzsaw coming at you, and you're being chased by some ghosts, and all this is happening. You're trying to figure out how to get out of this mess. How do I get out of this mess? And if you die, oh, well, I'll just try again and again and again until you get it right, because it's got that level of charm, that sort of one more try vibe going for it, that you'll appreciate as you're trying to make do over these challenges. And since the checkpoints are honestly fairly spread out into the game, you do have to repeat some sections here and there, but you don't find yourself being like, well, this is some bullshit. You just said you're going to be like, well, I guess it's time to try again, but this time I'm going to get it right. 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 You get the point.
Did you get it right?
I have multiple times.
This time.
But this time.
You got exactly what I was saying.
Yeah, I know. Oh, I know. But like this, I think the game is lots of fun. Like, I enjoy it despite the fact that I really wish you got new abilities and upgrade your slingshot or whatever. I just like playing the game because once it gets its hooks into you, you're going to want to see through each section. That death is going to motivate you to try again, unless you're the type that throws a controller in a rage, in which case this game ain't for you. Trust me, buddy. I'm going to tell you right now, you're going to break your goddamn controller. But you probably already know that. If you're not into difficult games, this is not for you. But if you're okay with a game that is difficult, but also is honestly fair with the checkpoints for try again, then you really can't go wrong with this. And I didn't even mention before, but the music is really good in this game, too. I think it's solid. Chips.
It is $11.99. What are your thoughts on the package?
I'm going to give it a try just because the aforementioned things that I wasn't, like I mentioned earlier, is not being fond of. But it's a high-end try. Give this a go. I think you'll find yourself happily amused by it. And if not, I said try because I want you breaking my legs because I told you to play a hard game.
Hey, works for me.
After his legs, folks.
Yeah, go after his
legs. Stop doing that.
Go after him. Take him down.
Jesus Christ, I thought we were friends.
I've been playing Way of the Hunter. It's in my nature to just hunt things now. I have to, stealth. I'll be stealthing through Best Buy, peeking over the shelves, noticing you browsing the PS5 games, and I'll just jump and, lunge a... I don't know, a marker or something into your neck, and you'll be like, what the fuck are you doing? And I'm like, I don't know.
You're hunting the ultimate sport.
Yes.
Man.
Oh, I'm a killer. Music. I don't know. What should we play this episode?
How about the Turrican 2 track from Lonely Rolling Stars?
That is a fantastic idea.
That's a great track.
I am happy to hear that. Let's do that stuff.
Well, Chris introduced the track. Tell us about it.
This is from the band, what is their name? No, I'm just kidding. Lonely Rolling Stars, which feature many friends of the show. Grant Henry, at least for this album, was with them. And Norg, who actually not only is the bassist for this track, but also the arranger. And this is the title screen to Turrican 2, which I finally got to hear in the context of the original game, thanks to the Turrican Anthology Volume 1.